This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Dashran Johan. The COVID-19 pandemic has often brought out the best in our society, from medical personnel working hard on the front lines of the coronavirus battlefield to communities working in unison to do their part in flattening the curve. However, the past couple of months have also highlighted the worst our society has to offer, with many instances of bigotry and discrimination in the form of racism, xenophobia, and even homophobia. So I have with me on the line Dr. Karim Bertash, a senior lecturer in psychology from Monash University, Malaysia, to discuss why the pandemic has brought out the worst in some people. Hello, Dr. Karim. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. Glad to be there.
So, from a psychological perspective, what causes bigotry? I mean, what motivates people to discriminate?
Well, you can see it on a personal and a social level. On a personal level, individual level, we say in psychology, the cause of bigotry can be anything, such as fear, jealousy, competition, and so on. But as a social psychologist, I say that is not the most important part. The most important question is, where does it really come from?
Mm.
Because bigotry, and I will take racism as an example, is not something we are born with. Okay? I always say a newborn baby is neither born capitalist nor racist. Okay? You can show a baby a pack of dollars, the baby will not be happy and say, okay, I need that. The same thing. You can show a baby a human being from any part of the world, and the baby will not have any bad attitudes towards that human being based on the way he or she looks. So these systems are human creations, okay, that were not always part of our societies, okay? So I like to study this, and what is very important to know is that both of these systems, racism, for example, has been imposed to us in history by ruling elites. I will take Europe as an example, because it's not only where I come from, but it's also the root of racism and capitalism. Okay.
Right.
So European elites historically fostered the idea of race and racism for two reasons. One, to justify the mistreatment and abuse of peoples in the colonies, saying that non-European beings were inferior, justified their exploitation. Okay, that is one reason. And reason number two, again, think about the colonies, but also within Europe, by dividing people into racial groups and by treating them differently, they start to compete and blame each other for adversity, for a lack of resources. Okay? So while in all objectivity, they should organize all these people and blame the ruling class who decides how much of the piece of the pie they get, think about wages, think about job opportunities, think about social welfare. The ruling class understood the danger that social harmony would pose to their power, so they created categories to divide the population up. And historically, one of the most effective systems to keep people divided and subdued to a white elite was racism and colorism, simply dividing people on nonsense characteristics that we can see. So we're not talking about personality or behavior, but purely characteristics that you can see with the eye. People became hateful to each other, and it's amazing how persistent this is. So think about it. Eh? A large part of the post-colonial non-European countries in the world, for example, Brazil, Australia, Argentina, South Africa, New Zealand, still have a white ruling class that still reaps the benefits of a racist system that unfairly carries the myth that they are better than others. And therefore, in their own countries, indigenous people still are living a marginalized life. Now, to get back to the psychological cause, we call that minimal group paradigm in psychology. So to your listeners who want to look it up, go to Google minimal group paradigm, which says that when you divide people into categories, they will start to compete. And this is a very strong and persistent phenomenon that probably has evolutionary roots. Categorization breeds competition.
Right. Yeah. So we have to go and talk about fear as well, because A lot of studies and even one on Psychology Today, which I'm looking at right now, it says that racism or prejudice or discrimination also comes from based on fear. It usually stems from fear. And what they basically say is it comes from primitive survival mechanisms and our instinct to avoid danger, to fear anything that appears to be different, which then, you know, leads fear of other people.
Right. Now, that is correct. So we do have a fear mechanism, in particular when we are, when we lack resources. Mm. Right? When there is a serious lack of resources, think about COVID-19, we have a lack of, well, maybe job opportunities, lack of health care. So when there is a threat to our resources, people become more xenophobic. Here's the interesting part. Xenophobia means a fear of strangers, okay? And it makes sense in the old days when we were hunter-gatherers that we would fear other groups if our resources were in danger. But now we fear our own, okay? So we fear people within our own society that are just categorized in a different group, as a different group, okay? So the interesting thing is racism has not always been part of our world. It has been created. Mm. You always need to ask, who benefits, okay? So let's take U.S. and Trump as an example. You're talking about fear, where he's waging fear about Chinese, for example, okay? So the question with racism is always, who benefits? Okay, if you take Trump as an example, he is failing miserably with regards to responding to COVID-19. U.S. has become one of the worst hit countries in the world.
Right.
What does this mean? This would mean that an angry mob of citizens would threaten his and other elites' privileged position. And also the idea on the global stage of white supremacy, the colonial idea that white people are doing better than everyone else. So what do you do? The oldest trick in the book is division through racism. You say it's the China virus, you say it's the vote of the Chinese, and attention of the people has been diverted to the Chinese, while the ruling class, who is failing to protect them, are being protected from this scrutiny, so to speak.
Right, okay. Now, so you bring up a good point there about how, you know, like Donald Trump has, you know, used sort of frame the virus as like this Chinese virus. But we'll get to that in just a second, right? But just to backtrack a little bit more. So even in the pre-COVID-19 world, right, you've seen, you know, the cases of racism, xenophobia, and other forms of discrimination. It has always been an unfortunate part of our society, right? However, over the past couple of months, this appears to have become more prevalent. So my question is, can a pandemic cause a rise in bigotry and discrimination? And if yes, why?
Yes, absolutely. It can result in a rise in xenophobia. And that comes back to what I just said. And that is because when you divide people up into different categories and people are under threat, okay, under threat, people become very, what you could almost say, ethnocentric. They become very protective of their own group. Okay. Again, this has to do with minimal group paradigm. If you put people into one group, they become very protective of this group, but also become very disharmonious, very hostile to people outside of that category. Now, we are now during COVID-19. This is a time that is not only threatened to people's lives, to their resources, but also a unionization of people would threaten ruling classes, such as Donald Trump, for example. So the not only do the ruling classes rile up racism, okay, because it diverts the attention, but it's also something that is way more effective right now because people are very much protective of the resources of themselves and their own group, their own category, so to speak. So right. Indeed, to get back to what you just said, yes, when you're in a threatening situation, whether it's 9/11, or COVID-19, people do indeed become more what we would call ethnocentrist.
Right. So looking at many of the cases that have been reported and have continuously been reported in the media, for example, in the United States and other Western countries, there have been many reports of Asian Americans getting blamed for the spread of the virus. And, you know, some of them even get beaten up. And there are also cases where, for example, the LGBT community is blamed by religious extremists for the spread of COVID-19. Why do the minorities always end up feeling the brunt of this attack, even if it's, you know, not their fault?
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good question. And I must say it still relates strongly to what I just said. One has always asked this question: who benefits from xenophobia? Who benefits in the end from racism and discrimination? Okay, so let's talk about minorities, and let's, for example, talk about immigrants. Okay, immigrant minorities. We all know that in general, immigrants do nothing bad to our lives. They have, in general, very little money. They take up most of the time the lowest jobs. Mm-hmm. So they are in general no threat to our resources whatsoever. At the same time, and listen to this carefully, we have people who are billionaires. Yet no one complains about them. Billionaires such as Jeff Bezos, who now even became the world's first trillionaire. It's shocking. This is one person who can pull half of the continent of Africa out of poverty with his trillions of dollars. Yet his workers get the lowest wages imaginable, and no one gets any part of his huge piece of pie. Are people blaming Bezos? Not really. Who are people blaming in general? As always, the weakest of the weakest, the immigrants.
Mm.
And it's the same with war. We have a ruling class that wages war in foreign countries. Think about Syria. We get immigrants from these war-torn countries. And who are getting blamed? Not the elites. It's the immigrants. Blaming innocent but weak groups is a very, very efficient way to keep people's attention away from the real problem. It is abusing people's evolved mechanism of competing for resources by creating artificial categories and saying, hey, watch out, the other category is trying to take everything away from you.
Right. And I think that you know, gives us an opportunity to sort of segue into the next thing that I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, something that you actually just touched on, and that's, have politicians and government officials played a role in xenophobia that we've been seeing throughout the COVID-19 pandemic? Because it isn't just Trump, right? Although he is, you know, the biggest example that is always on the media, but it isn't just him. Even in Malaysia, there have been plenty of debates on social media, on the act of carrying out immigration raids during the pandemic, or turning away Rohingya boats. So what are the effects of politicians and government officials doing and saying these things?
Right. Okay, I'm happy you asked that question, because it's a very, very important question, because usually it gets ignored so much, this kind of question. Why are actually the people in power promoting this kind of racism? Right? We are usually focusing on what I call, and in psychology we call that, the individual level. Mm-hmm. You see an individual doing racism or discrimination, and we say, oh, that's a racist individual. It doesn't work that way. Human life is always based in a context. It comes from somewhere. Okay, like I said, everything has a reason. And as a scientist, I always need to question the root causes of behavior, because and also everything that I assume as normal. Okay, where does blaming immigrants come from, and why does it happen? We all know immigrants are not the cause. It's nonsense. You can stop all immigration and the virus will still spread.
Mm-hmm.
If immigration is the problem, why are expats not blamed? Why am I and other Europeans not blamed?
That's a very, very good point, actually.
Yes. And because, is it because we come from privileged part of the world? Is it because we are better? Or is it because you have internalized colonial racism and you're blind for the asymmetrical blaming that you are that people are doing? Your blind spot forgets about tourists. Your blind spot forgets about light-skinned groups, because you have been indoctrinated to think that light-skinned human beings and human beings with money are above you. Again, this way of thinking has a root cause, and there is a motivation behind it. Namely, and this gets back to your question about the ruling elites, some people benefit from this way of thinking. It protects It protects their privileged position in this world. Okay? So think about it. While you and your group are mistreating your own people and others by calling them names, by humiliating their dark skin, by destroying your own skin using bleach, by painting your face white under your hijab, other groups are reaping the benefits and leading a great life. Other groups are traveling the world, getting kind attention, are never blamed, have easy dating life, while being just as human and just as good and bad as everyone else. So I always ask, do people want this? Do you want this? Do people want to be this kind of mental slave to a system that benefits one group, but makes the life of others miserable? It has a reason, and usually it comes from those in power, such as you're saying, Matteo Salvini in Italy, and other elites.
Okay, so going back to something you touched on earlier, unlike the Spanish flu or the Ebola virus, in recent years, the World Health Organization, the WHO, has made a conscious effort not to name viruses based on geographical locations. Yet, people like Donald Trump have resorted to calling it the Chinese virus. What are the impacts of doing so?
Yeah, so it's still, we still stay in the same realm of ideas, so to speak. But your question is a very good one. The impact of calling it the Chinese virus instead of, for example, COVID-19, is that a cause has been ascribed to the negative impact on people's lives. Okay? So that is a very psychological aspect. We have negativity. We feel negativity. We feel threat. And due to the insecurity we as human beings feel, we need to have a cause. Where does it come from? And often, ruling elites such as Donald Trump know this and know how to very efficiently make use of this and ascribe a negative impact on people's lives to the Chinese. Okay? And the result is that, like I said before, when you categorize people into different categories and you start blaming other categories for resource loss, think about work, think about health, people will start blaming the other group and engage in intergroup hate. It is very important for people, for your listeners, with the intellectual capacity to understand deeper social dynamics, to really question their everyday behavior that they never questioned, that they have always assumed as normal. So ask yourself, are you racist? Do you go along with your society or family or friends calling others lazy or criminal or stupid or dirty? And then ask yourself, if you really want to behave almost like a sheep, you know, or better yet, like a tool for dominant groups to keep your life and that of others full of hatred and divisions. Okay? And this is one of the core reasons of Donald Trump calling it the China virus. It's assigning blame to another group, diverting attention and riling up hate. And in the meantime, what is he doing? He is doing one benefit to the rich people after the other during the COVID-19, while people are suffering, and he is avoiding most of the blame, so to speak.
So speaking of politicians and government officials, right? In March, Claire Wenham, an assistant professor of global health policy at the London School of Economics, said that while governments primarily impose limitations such as travel bans to slow the spread of the virus, they also do so to reduce panic among the population. And she called this, it may come off as a rather controversial statement, but she called this security theater. Basically, you know, it's a just for show stunt rather than an essential step. So on the one hand, you know, taking measures to reduce panic among the masses is a good thing, right? But is there a downside to this quote-unquote security theater?
Well, she is right, okay? So it is also theater to divert attention to a source other than the government. If the British government would say, okay, guys, it is up to us and we will do our best, okay? This would be a good thing, don't get me wrong, I'd like that. But all eyes would be on the government and any failure to contain the virus would be ascribed to them. So by engaging in theater, and saying you try to avoid foreigners from coming in, any subsequent spread will be blamed on, for example, foreigners still getting in instead of failed politics. So, to answer your question, what is the downside? Well, this is the downside for regular people. We still have these divisions, foreigners versus non-foreigners, but it's the upside for the ruling class, the English ruling class. Now, indeed, a movement control order, such as you see here in Malaysia, is necessary, and the Malaysian government is actually doing better than many Western countries. On the other hand, immigration is just a part of the story, and even stopping it completely would not contain the spread of the virus. So indeed, you could say it is part of a theater.
Another aspect I'd like to touch on is misinformation. So in an interview with the Deakin Herald, psychologist Dr. Naveen Jayaram of the Sakra World Hospital said that misinformation and rumor mongering play a huge role in driving people to discriminate against others as well. Do you agree with this?
Yes, I think Dr. Jayaram says it's very good here that rumor mongering play a huge role in driving this behavior. Because under emotional stress and in uncertain times, people long for certainty. Okay, so when there are groups of people who say that they know it all, think about conspiracists, think about China blamers such as Trump, many people in these stressful times will embrace these theories because it gives them a sense of certainty, a false sense of protection by thinking that they know the cause of their problems. Now, indeed, when people think they know the cause of a problem, a sense of control emerges because knowing a cause often provides a possible solution to a problem. Okay? So human beings hate the feeling of being out of control. In fact, most psychological disorders have something to do with a loss of control. Think about anxiety disorders. Think about clinical depression. Okay? So as a result, is that people always chase that sense of control to feel calm and at ease. Okay? During stressful times, such as during a pandemic or war, this means that people are exceptionally susceptible to false messages that may decrease feelings of uncertainty. It is not a coincidence that throughout history, ruling elites have used adverse times to get the population's full support by providing them with a cause for their problems as well as a solution. Think about Nazi Germany during the economic depression. Think about George Bush after 9/11, or even Modi in current-day India. The question always is, what is the root cause of these rumors and what are the motivations behind them?
Right. Then, so I have to ask, right, then do human beings have a tendency to trust their feelings over facts? Is that why it's easy for all these rumors to spread on social media, etc.?
Yeah, that's a very good point. In fact, that there was this old philosophical idea that human beings are rational beings. Okay, that's a very Western idea. We are rational beings. We do a cost-benefit analysis, and then we get to a conclusion. Well, the internet has shown that it is actually not the case. Okay, if you play onto people's emotions, especially the strongest emotions such as fear and anger, okay, pretty much all rationality goes out the door, and people really rely on their emotional judgment or gut feeling, so to speak. So you see that for example, and again I take the United States as an example. If you have a politician that focuses more on facts, okay, on intellectual knowledge and tries to bring a very rational message versus a politician that is very emotional, that riles up people's fears and anger, such as Trump, you often see that a person like that is more popular because people rely so much on their gut feeling. So you have a good point there.
All right. So the pandemic, and I think this is what it all boils down to, right? The pandemic will eventually come to an end, but will the stigma? So my mind immediately goes to the 9/11 attacks. It's been 19 years since the terror attacks on the World Trade Center, yet the Muslim community is still being stigmatized for it. So what are the long-term effects of this, you know, discrimination, bigotry, xenophobia, racism on the minorities?
Right. Okay, so that again, and these are all very good questions, and I'm happy that I can still like come back to the things that I've said before. It's always important for all of us, your listeners, you, myself, to really reflect, where does stigma and racism come from? Okay, so let me give you an example. For my own research, I've read a lot of historical facts, anthropological, but also from history. And the interesting thing is that the whole issue, for example, of race or skin color was not an issue during the most part of human history. Okay, that is something that has been imposed to us 500 years ago during colonial times. Before that, of course, indeed, historical texts talk about skin color, talk about that some human beings look different based on where they are from, but there was no assigning of value to human beings based on their skin color or the way they look. So that is something very, very recent. So we think it's something very natural, but it's not. It's very recent. So, but the problem is, with or without the pandemic, the stigma will be there. Why? As long as we divide each other into categories, we will compete. This will always be the case. This is human nature. If we put ourselves into categories, we will compete, because people have the tendency to always protect their own category and compete with other categories. So why do we compete, you ask? Well, because, and this is also very important, this is deeper thinking about the reasons of stigma and racism, because we live in a very unfair Western capitalist system where a very small group extracts most resources and the rest of us are made to compete for a very small piece of the pie. So by having us divided and competing, a small group of elites, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's Jeff Bezos, doesn't matter. Whether it's elites in Asia, it doesn't matter. A capitalist system will maintain the status quo, okay, the system. So there are enough resources in this world. Please let that sink in. There are enough resources for all of us in the world, whether it is food, healthcare, living space, you name it. That may sound shocking, but it's the truth. It is just that we are involuntarily made part of a capitalist system that allows unfair distribution of resources. So while we are in that system that divides us according to nonsense characteristics, sexual orientation, race, you name it, this will stay. So if we want to get rid of this stigma, this intergroup hate, intergroup competition, we need, what I always say, a decolonial, anti-capitalist, and anti-racist rethinking of society, and to actively refuse others letting us divide each other up for the benefit of a small group of privileged people.
Well said. Okay. Just before we wrap up, in a time where, you know, we should be sort of united, you know, facing right. The COVID-19, we've seen a lot of discrimination and bigotry. So do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I would say just a short final thought, and that is that race does not exist, okay? This is a category that has been imposed on us, but race does not exist. We very gradually look different the further you go from one place to another, okay? There are no racial demarcations, and the colonizer has instilled this mindset, this categorization of people into all of our minds, and we are all still suffering under this mental colonization. So what I'm saying to not only myself and to you, but also your listeners, is that we have to free ourselves from these categories.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Karim.
Most welcome. Most welcome.
I've been speaking to Dr. Karim Bertash, Senior Lecturer in Psychology from Monash University, Malaysia, on why the COVID-19 pandemic has brought out the worst in some people. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, on bfm.my, or on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.